Good morning and welcome. It is Saturday morning, which means time for books, writing and literary culture on Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel and once again, I am very happy to be here. Now, I'm sure some of you actually have an inkling of what today's show is going to be about. If you have not been following me on Twitter or kind of checking out the literary news, I'm going to let you know the Stella Prize was announced this week in an awards ceremony on Thursday night. We found out the latest winner of the Stella. Now, the Stella Prize has been awarded since 2013. It's now in its sixth year. It was created to celebrate and promote Australian women's writing and to redress this bias that there was in the representation for Australian women writers on awards lists, in media coverage and book reviews. This was a real problem, like, you know, reaching levels of like 70% male authors were being represented. And so the Stella Prize really wanted to get out there and promote the amazing women writers that are out there in this country. The prize is open for books of fiction and non-fiction, and the winner is a book that is excellent, original, and engaging. We are huge supporters of the Stella Prize on Final Draft, and I can very much testify to the fact that the winner is always excellent, original, and engaging. Emily Bitto, Charlotte Wood, Heather Rose, so many fantastic writers that have spoken to me on the show, and their winning books are part of the Australian canon, I would go so far as to say. Now, I do have the current Stella winner joining me on the show today. I'm going to tease this just a little bit longer. Stick around after a very short break. We'll be back on Final Draft to tell you who the winner of the Stella Prize for 2018 is and bring you a conversation about her book. You're listening to 2SER 107.3. You're on Final Draft and we'll be back after this short message.
Photography, Power and Passion is an unmissable photography seminar. A jam-packed day featuring award-winning artists, photojournalists, curators, documentary photographers and more. Exploring the shifting shape of media and art through thought-provoking discussions and presentations. Part of Head On Photo Festival 2018, the seminar will be held on Sunday, May 6th at Palace Cinemas Chevelle, Paddington. Book online now at headon.com.au. 2SER is a proud media partner of Head On Photo Festival.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3 and you're listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. Now, it is almost a part of Australian literary mythology that in 2011... a panel of women publishers, editors and writers banded together to address the obvious sexism and gender bias that existed on prize lists and in media representation of Australian writing. From that meeting emerged the Stella Prize, celebrating the best in Australian women's writing from the previous year. Now, in its sixth year, the Stella Prize is a powerful barometer of Australian writing and an exciting event on our literary calendar. Announced on Thursday, the winner of the 2018 Stella Prize for her collective memoir Tracker is Alexis Wright. And I'm very fortunate to have Alexis joining me in the studio today. Welcome, Alexis. Welcome to 2SER.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having me here. It's lovely.
It's so exciting to be talking about this book and and with your body of work. This is just such a lovely moment for me. But it's not about me.
Well.
it's about your book, Tracker. And I thought we could start with the man himself. Can you tell me a little bit about who Tracker Tilmouth was?
Tracker Tilmouth was an Eastern Islander man from Central Australia. He was also a member of the Stolen Generation. He was taken away from Central Australia from his family after his mother passed away. He was taken from his father, Tracker, and his two younger brothers. Tracker was four at the time, and William was three. And the younger brother, who's passed away now, he was only about one. And they were taken 1,000 kilometres away by authorities to separate the children from their families. So the idea was to send children from Central Australia to the top end of the Northern Territory, and children from the top end of the Northern Territory to Central Australia, to really make that huge separation by distance from their families, so their families wouldn't have any influence over the upbringing of the children. And Tracker came back to Central Australia and found his way back into, you know, through the help of a lot of older people, family, and people of high culture found his way back into his own world and his own place in Central Australia. He became a very, you know, became a remarkable man, a visionary on how to develop economic futures for Aboriginal people, particularly in the top end in the Northern Territory, yeah. On building what his mission was to, how do you create the enjoyment of land rights? So, after a lot of the land rights battles that took place in the Northern Territory, some of those land right claims went for, you know, over 20 years, right up to the High Court on several occasions sometimes, and to get the land, traditional land back, and so most of those claims were successful, and so people got their traditional land back. But then what was the question afterwards? And that was seen to be what everyone had forgotten: how do you make the enjoyment of land rights? And and that was what Track was on about. Yeah, how do you build an Aboriginal economy so that people could live on their land and be able to have a future for our children, mm. and a future for our culture, which is a really long and important culture. It's the oldest surviving culture in the world. And as Tracker thought too, it's our right, it's our property right to be able to do that. Otherwise, we're always going to be dependent on other people and always be the, you know, that bad narrative, you know, that controls what people think about Aboriginal people. Very negative narrative that we see in the country, and part of that is because we haven't been able to build the economies that we need to survive, and governments are not looking at it in the way that it should be, and in the way that Tracker was, and you know, visualising and thinking about and developing on how to build that. Mm. Vision splendid, because a lot of people can't think outside the box, and particularly bureaucrats who are in charge of government programs and politicians who, you know, come in on a short-term basis, who are not visionaries themselves. They don't understand what's really required. So it's what their requirement is how they get back into government in 3 or 4 years' time. It's not the planning that's required to rebuild an Aboriginal economy based on, you know, where we're at today. Mm. And but Track was also using the principles of you know, a traditional culture, you know, cause it, so he was thinking of those sort of principles and how to develop it into a modern Aboriginal economy that would ensure our survival in a place like Australia, yeah. today.
You've beautifully encompassed a vast story, a vast legacy there, mm. and there are so many points that I want to take up. But I wanted to sort of think about the way you've told this story. Your introduction to Tracker, you begin with a question: mm. how to tell an impossible story, one almost too big to fit in a mm. book. Mm-hmm. In your stellar acceptance speech, mm. you acknowledge that any book is nothing less than a monumental achievement. So the telling of Tracker's story is a collective effort of bringing together voices. Can you tell me about this way of telling a story, of telling a life, and what it brought to your telling of Tracker's life?
When I finished the Swan book, which was my last novel, some years ago, then I started on my publisher, Ivor Indyk, from Giramondo Publishing. He spoke to me... you know, about what I should, you know, we were talking about what I'll be doing next, and he said, he reminded me that I always wanted to do some writing with Tracker. Well, Tracker really wanted me to do some writing with him over the years, you know, and usually it was all about he wanted me to respond for on his behalf, or, you know, under his name, write a feature article or something for some journalist.
Kind of ghostwriting type.
Yes, yeah. yes. and he'd want it instantly and urgently, so you'd have to drop everything, and lots of times I didn't really know how to respond, because Tracker wouldn't stay around long enough to, you know, sit with you and say, this is what I want to say, in this article.
It strikes me he had a very unique voice, too, that you would have to capture.
You'd have to capture that really unique voice. And and usually it was all about, some stupid thing, some stupidity of, the federal government or the Northern Territory government. But Tracker wasn't the person who sat around and did writing himself. He was the sort of person who walked the talk. He thought a lot, and he went all over the country. Right. When I sat down to think about how to write this book, and I didn't really know at the start. I knew it couldn't be a conventional Western style biography. I thought nobody would really thank me for it, particularly our own people. They would have said that was probably the wrong thing to do for someone like Tracker, and he was just such a huge figure in our world, and really hard to pin down. And a lot of people said, he was too much, he was too far, he was too out there, and he was extraordinary, or he could be, you told a friend, he could be a chameleon, he could be whatever you wanted him to be, and or he could be a virus, and spread everywhere, and you couldn't stop him. And so I knew I couldn't do a biography, and I couldn't retrace his footsteps all over the country, and to every small community or some little outpost where some policeman was stationed, Tracker would just call and say, "Where's your fishing nets?" I knew I couldn't do that sort of biography, and it didn't seem right, and for the sort of person he was, and we live through very complex times as well, and it's very hard to define some of the things that are going on in our world, and I thought about a number of things that come from our world, and how we, in the traditional sense, how we keep stories and practice stories and how we have a responsibility for stories, where in traditional ways, the storyline, a song line would go across country, and there's different people along the way, have different parts, different responsibilities, for the story, and to safeguard the story, and keep the story alive and going. And it's, it's many voices telling a big story. In all through my life, through family meetings or big community meetings that we have, it's always been, telling the story or the correct story, or finding what the story should be, through consensus, where everybody has a chance to say what they want to say, whether it's a good story or a bad story, sometimes we don't really know what the consensus is until you realise that some days later, that's the consensus, that's the story, and I thought I should try to bring that sort of idea to the book, that it should be a book of everybody having a chance to tell their part in the story, and that's what Tracker wanted as well. He said to me at the start, "Righty, I just want to bookend this book and let everybody else tell their part in the story. Let them say whatever they like." And he actually told a lot of people to be honest and tell the truth, and don't hold back. And like he'd never hold back. So that was the way I approached the book. And also with Tracker, he didn't like. He wasn't the sort of person to sit around gloating about all the things that he ever did in his life, and he did, he achieved a lot of things in his life, but and a lot of things happened in his life, and it was much better to have some of the other people tell those stories who could tell those stories about what happened and their part in the story as well, The good thing about this book is all the contributors, who Tracker agreed to, who I should speak to, they're already important people, you know, already remarkable, fantastic people. And Tracker did gather around him a lot of really, you know, really smart people. And because he had jobs for everybody, you know, if he thought that you could do something for, you know, for what he thought should be done, he'd want you to do it, and he would. That's what you should do. If you know, I want you to raise $5 million for this, you know, project I want to get off the ground in some community, and he thinks that you could raise the $5 million quite easily. That would be your job, so he was very good at planting in, you know, what I call his archives, because he didn't write down a lot of things. Yeah. His archives were in the minds of other people, yeah. and all these very smart people that he gathered around him. So that was really good, and that what comes out in the book as well is there's all these really remarkable contributors.
You are listening to Final Draft on 2SER 107.3, and I am in conversation with Alexis Wright. Alexis is the winner of the 2018 Stella Prize announced this week for her biography of Tracker Tilmouth called Tracker. It's time for some music. We're going to have a short break and listen to Alice Skye, a fantastic Victorian singer-songwriter, before we come back with the rest of the conversation with Alexis. This is from Alice Skye, Only Bones Get Left Behind.
I found you by the water. I found you on the shore. The whitest and the purest thing I think I'd ever saw. I headed to the horizon, lighter than a feather, just like the ones that you
once as alive as.
This is 2SER 107.3, listening to Final Draft, and that was Alice Skye, Only Bones Get Left Behind. My name is Andrew Popel, and I am in conversation with the 2018 Stella Prize winner, Alexis Wright, for her memoir, Tracker.
It strikes me as you talk about stories and storytelling, it sounds very dynamic. The verbs you use are very dynamic. It's not a book that you put on a shelf. It's an ongoing process. And I wonder, does a different type of storytelling require a different type of listening? What should the reader bring to a reading of Tracker?
Well, I'm not too sure. I at the launch in Darwin that we had. We had a big launch in Darwin in early March, and what I thought people should bring to Tracker is a yellow marking pen and mark all the important parts in it and take up his stories, take up his ideas, and make the stories their own and build the vision splendid. You know, that's what he wanted.
Can I do that then? Because there's so much to discuss. I mean, for people listening who have not seen this book, where it's enormous. There's 600 odd pages, and so it's hard to pick just one thing. But the vision splendid intrigued me. A vision of an Aboriginal economy that would allow economic development aligned with cultural practices, and this idea that negotiating treaty involves both parties to bring something to the table. That's what I really got. The track felt like you can't go to the table empty-handed to negotiate. So what is that legacy? How can that be built on?
It talks about this quite a bit in the book, about that you can't go to the table empty-handed because people want to negotiate with you, and they want to see what you got to you got to put on the table, and at the moment he thought we've lost the plot, we don't know what we're doing, and we've got nothing to bring to the table, so be very careful about negotiating treaties if you got nothing to bring to the table, so that's what his idea was, that we needed to be building economies, that we should be looking at our property rights and that property right argument that has never been taken up in native title. And he thought it was a very easy thing to accomplish by going back to the High Court and getting them to reread Mabo and Wick and look at the property right issue that was left out, because we need to have our property rights.
And that's going to involve something else that you discuss about Tracker. In his legacy, you discuss his ability to take people outside their comfort zone. Do you feel that we're at a point in our cultural and political history as a country where people are moving outside their comfort zone? Or are people just sort of coasting along? And I'm thinking particularly politicians and the broader will. So a huge part of that is the white population, when ideas have changed, when radical ideas, so Tracker's talking about a segregated economy that can allow development. Are we willing to put ourselves outside our comfort zone to consider these and make them happen?
Not yet, I don't think. Perhaps if people do get the marking pen out and start looking and studying a book like this, it would help them to sort of take up some of the things that he was thinking, and to think bigger and to really focus in on how to build that that vision splendid in a way that they never even thought possible. But it really requires big thinking and people being prepared to think big and be taken out of the comfort zone and that idea of the status quo. I'm not sure how to do that, but I think there's I think there's people around in this country, and there will be even more in the future, who are prepared to look at the work of a visionary like Tracker.
It may seem trite to say, but maybe it does begin one conversation at a time. And I mean, it's hard to overstate the importance of Tracker. As I read it, I realised we've got something that that strikes as a memoir, but then as I read, we've got an economic and a philosophical treatise in here. There is so much. Such an important book. I want to ask you a little bit about winning the Stella Prize, though. So you won the Miles Franklin for Carpenteria. I've got Carpenteria sitting next to my copy of Tracker. That was in 2007. Now, in your Stella acceptance speech for Tracker, you paid tribute to the diversity of the shortlist, your fellow writers that you were standing with when the prize was announced. What change have you seen in literary prize shortlists, indeed in Australia's literary culture over those years?
Well, I have been looking at a lot of shortlists over the years, but I think the writing has become more diverse, and I think that's a really good thing. I think I've seen some really great writing from writers from different backgrounds, and I think it's great and really exciting for to happen in Australia, because it makes us feel more mature as a nation. We are a nation of many, many voices and many styles, many ways of thinking, cultures, and including our own important Aboriginal culture, which is the most important, I think. But
that is hard to argue with. And look at the shortlist as well as Tracker. We had Claire G. Coleman's Terra Nullius, another fantastic work. So diverse, so wonderful. I'm enjoying this conversation so much, and I am very aware that if people want to hear more from you, Sydney Writers' Festival. It's only a few weeks away, and you're going to be discussing Tracker at the Seymour Centre as part of the festival. We've discussed so much about what's in the book, but I wondered what a festival audience brings to you and to your work. Once the book's finished, what do you enjoy about going to a festival and discussing this with fellow readers?
It seems to be something that writers have to do, is go to writers' festivals and talk about their work. And I mean, it's just a great opportunity. The more you talk about the work, the more that you get to even understand what you tried to do in a book like Tracker. And I'm looking forward to talking with Geordie Williamson as well. Geordie is he's quite a remarkable. He's fantastic. He was probably one of our best literary critics in the country, and he did a really good review of Tracker and also the Swan book. And so I'm looking forward to the conversation and also talking to readers and who come to the writers' festivals like the Sydney Festival, and hearing what they need to, want to talk to me about, about the book and the questions they might want to ask me. So that's a good thing, and I like that, and that's been the great thing about this book, is that there's been such wonderful reader feedback, and people who've contacted me, written me letters, and or emailed me, or through my publisher, and I've really enjoyed that people are really enjoying this book. That's really good.
It strikes me that this is a book that invites engagement, and I guess the Writers' Festival is a wonderful opportunity to engage with you, Alexis, and I love how open and generous you've been with your time chatting with me today. So I would encourage people, go out and find a copy of Tracker. You're going to see it everywhere. Trust me, from today. I am speaking with Alexis Wright. She is the 2018 winner of the Stella Prize for her collective memoir, Tracker. It's the story of Tracker Tilmouth. Alexis, thank you so much for coming in to 2SER and joining me today.
Thanks, Andrew. It's a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
2018 marks the final year commemorating the centenary of Anzac. These school holidays come down to Centenary Square, Parramatta, for poppy-making workshops and activities. Watch and listen to stories of the Anzacs come to life with large-scale projections across St John's Cathedral. For dawn services and more information, visit cityofparramatta.nsw.gov.au/Anzac Day. City of Parramatta sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're on Final Draft, but not for much longer. I am Andrew Popel, and I am about to say goodbye. I want to send a huge thank you to Alexis Wright, who joined me on the show today. Alexis is the 2018 winner of the Stella Prize for her memoir of Tracker Tilmouth, entitled Tracker.
If you want to catch more of Alexis Wright, we did mention the Sydney Writers Festival, which is only a few weeks away. Alexis will be doing a discussion on Thursday, the 3rd of May. And if you want more information about Alexis, other Stellar Prize winners like Charlotte Wood, who'll be at the festival, you can go to swf.org.au. Stay tuned for The Vulture's Nest, but for now, I'm going to say goodbye. And my name is Andrew Popel. I'm back next week with more books, writing, and literary culture. See you then.